All right, we're going to hear about the two dots on the bottom of Ayin Vav and Bet. The Gemara here is discussing the Mishnah, B'kava Shalav V'tocha Mayim, where he blocks him inside of the water. The Gemara says here, Reisha Rabuta Kamashmalan, the Sefer Rabuta Kamashmalan. There is a Chiddush both in the Reisha and in the Sefer. Reisha Rabuta Kamashmalan, the Reisha's Chiddush is, Apagav Delav Ihu Dachafo, even though he was not the one who pushed him into the danger, then Yechol Alot Misham, but since now you're the one preventing him from exiting the danger, Umeit, and then he dies, Chayav, you're responsible. So somebody else pushed him into the water, someone else pushed him into the fire, but he could have exited. But now that you're preventing him from exiting, you become the responsible party for his death. Sefer Rabuta Kamashmalan, the safest Chiddush is, Apagav de Dachafo, even though he pushed him in, Kevin Yechol Alot Misham, since he had the ability to exit from there, Umeit, but nevertheless died, Patur. Obviously, Patur, Bidine Adam, Bidine Shemaim, that's a different thing. But as far as the Beit Din is concerned, they cannot prosecute such an individual, because once he pushed him into the water, the person had the ability to exit the water. The fact that he didn't exit in the end, either because somebody else interfered, or something changed, or the ladder fell down, we'll see later on, all different scenarios, what could have changed, but the moment that he pushed him into the water, he did have the ability to leave the water and escape the water, and therefore he is patur. That's the chiddush of the seifa. Kavash minolan. How do we know that if you entrap someone, that you are actually responsible for their death? The Gemara is going to use another term for it called mitzamtzim, which is that you narrow his ability to move, you stop his ability to escape. How do you know that you're responsible for that? Amushmol damakra, the pasuk says, Oh, be'evahi ka'u bi'ado, ve'amot, mot yumata makeh, rotzeachu. Kol adam yamita terotzeach b'figo bo. So the Gemara learns from o be'eva, the rabot et a mitzamtzeim. Be'eva, or o be'eva, comes to include a mitzamtzeim, someone who narrows the escape, narrows the ability for the person to move, and that's what causes the death, they are responsible for that. How gavra, de mitzamtzma de chiyuta de chavre, b'shimsha umeta. Individual trapped the animal of another party in the sun, and then the animal died because of exposure to the sun, dehydration, because he had entrapped or blocked the animal's ability to exit from the sun. Ravina Mechayev, Ravina says he's responsible for the damage done to the animal, the killing of the animal. Vacha Barav, Patar, says you're not responsible. Ravina Mechayev, Kavachomer. It's a Kavachomer. Marotzeach, Shaloasa, Boshogeg, Mezid, Bones Kiratzon. By Rutzeach, there's a different din between intentional and unintentional. Intentional is murder, and the person is then subject to a death penalty. Unintentional is shugeg, then you end up in galut. Two different dinim completely. And same thing with regards to ones versus ratzon. That if it's an ones versus a ratzon, there is a difference or differentiation there in the cases of murder. There, nevertheless, chiev bo'at mitzamtzeim. Despite those distinctions, if a person entraps another individual, then they are going to be responsible for the death of that individual. Nizakin, Shasaben, Shogeg, Mezid, Vanis Keratzon, as we know by Nizikin, that we have the principle of Adam Muad Beolam, that a person is always a Muad, always responsible, irrespective of whether they're intentional or unintentional, whether it was accidental or willing, and Udin Shechieh Behen et HaMitzamtzein, then certainly over there they should be Chayab with regards to Mitzamtzein. By murder, there are distinctions in the gradations of intent. And there we have the limud of obey vad that teaches us mitzamtzeim is chayiv. Nizikin, where a person does damage to another party's property, where there is no such distinctions between intentional and unintentional, certainly mitzamtzeim should be chayiv in that instance. So that's the kal v'chomer. Now, the Tosafot over here notes something that he mentions all through Shas, which is not agreed to by other Rishonim, like the Ramban in a number of places argues on this position of the Balei Tosafot. But the Balei Tosafot note over here that it's not that Adam Muad Be'olam Be'nizikin, and therefore carte blanche, anything he does, any damage he does, he will be responsible. The Balei Tosafot note over here that there are unsin. There are instances where a person will be considered to be accidental, or so out of their control, that they would not be held responsible for the nizikim that they do. And he says, V'yesh inyanei ones tafil nizakin patur. There are instances of ones by nizikin where you will be patur. Kamo, shemichaleik b'Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi makes a distinction. Ben, bavi ashen, ve'itzo kelim, a person who lays down to sleep next to utensils, and then in his fitful sleep, he breaks them. There he'll be responsible. L'haya yashen kvar, versus a case where he was sleeping already in the bed, and someone else brought the kelim afterwards and placed them near him. And then he has a fitful sleep and he breaks the kelim. In the first case, he's going to be chayav, because the kelim were already present when he went to sleep. In the second case, he will not be chayav. So you see there are cases of unseen where he's patur. As well as the Gemara in Haminiach, which talks about a fela at night, or Karen Zavit, coming around a corner where you can't see what you're doing coming around the corner. And he brings other instances, Tosafot goes through a list of cases to prove his point, that we find that the Gemara is poter unseen. And basically the distinction that he makes is that you have Gneva v'Aveda. Gneva and Aveda for Shomer Chinam are patur, for Shomer Zachar are chayav. Gneva and Aveda are forms of onis, but they're onis along the scale that runs a different gradation. Aveda was what I called an onis karod pshia. It's an accidental thing. You lost it. It wasn't intentional that you lost it, but it's something where we're going to hold you responsible or more responsible because had you taken better care, it wouldn't have happened. Gneva is an onis karov onis, meaning that it's something where it's out of your control, and it's something that is an outside exogenous variable entering in and then taking it away from you, assuming that you kept it properly and you stored it, obviously not in a safety deposit box, but you stored it in your house properly and someone comes in and steals it, that's an onis that's karov to onis. And so therefore, basic distinction Tosfon makes is, if it's like a veda, you're going to be chayav in onsin. If it is like Gneva, you're going to be patur ba'onsin. And that's a distinction he makes within Onis about when you are and when you're not chayav. All right, just back to the Gemara now. So Ravina says you're chayav because of this kavachomer from the case of Mitah to Nezikin. On the other hand, we saw that Rav Acha Barav says that you are patur. And the question there is, my time up. Rav Acha Barav puter, I'm Rav Misharshia, my time of Davu Adaba. What's the reasoning behind my grandfather Rav's position? The poter that he says you are patur, the makra, motumat hamakeh rotzeachu. That's the pasuk that we quoted. It says, obey vayikau biado biamot, motumat hamakeh rotzeachu. So the obey va is modified by motumat hamakeh rotzeachu, who is always a miut, and so therefore it says, rotzeachu dechayev lan mitzamtzeim. Only in the case of rotzeach is mitzamtzeim chayev. Benizakin lo chayev lan mitzamtzeim. Over there by Nezakin, we do not say that there is a chiyuv mitzamtzeim, and that's from the miut of who. So that's the difference in their opinions as to whether mitzamtzeim has application by Nezikin or does not have application by Nezikin. Amar Rava. Rava here is going to give us numerous dinim. They all revolve around one topic, which is what I call koach adam, the derivative action of an individual. And then there is what's called koach rishon and koach sheni, first derivative, second derivative, as to whether a person's responsible for the action that they took, how direct is the damage that comes to the individual who put in place whatever it is that's happening over here. So he's going to bring scenario after scenario, some of them chayav, some of them patur. All of them revolve around this point is how closely associated are you with the end outcome that happens. So Amar Rava, kafato, if he ties him up, umay pirav, patur. And then he dies from starvation, he is patur. Because at the time that he tied him up, the starvation wasn't there. It came over time that it happened. And so only was in his position he died because of starvation that came upon him at later date, not something that was there or present at the time that he tied him up. So that's how Rashi explains. The lo dami the mitzamtzim b'mayim. It's not similar to a person who entraps someone in the water, uba'or, or in the fire, da'oreg mizmulan. Because there, the death is immediate. Being unable to escape the water, the killer is now extant. You're forcing him to stay in that killing scenario. Same thing with the fire. If your person's already in the fire, they will burn to death unless they are removed from the fire. You're keeping them there, in essence, is allowing that murder to take place. The or the mayim to do its job and kill them. On the other hand, when you tie them up, the starvation happens over a period of time by itself. It is something that passively attacks the individual and is not necessarily present at the time that you tie them up. There are two key elements. We're going to see this in the things that Rava brings up. One of them is time. Is there a lapse of time between the action and the result that takes place? And the second thing is the danger or the quote-unquote killer imminent? Is it there already? And you can see that, you saw what we wrote in Rashi, you can see in Tosafot as well. Kafato may brav afilo yera'av kfar b'shah shekafato. Even if he started was hungry, or yet he was feeling those pangs of hunger when he was tied up, kevin de lo yam mitchazek alav harav, if it did not increase those pangs of anger, lo yamet. Meaning, in his current state, he wouldn't have died just being tied up. It is the continued state of being tied up that then doesn't allow him to eat, and then not allowing him to eat is what causes the problem. Havilei sofer rav lavo, it's as if the rav will come in the future, wasn't present then. The dog, dummy, the kafato b'chama. It's not similar to tying him up in the sun, which we'll see in 1 second. Shkvar nafla ala b'chama, because then the sun's already beating on him, and that could kill him now. So even though Rav will happen, technically if someone came and fed this guy who was tied up, he would be able to survive. So since there is a possibility of survival, and the danger is not imminent now, meaning it's not present at that moment, it develops over time, then you're not responsible. That does not mean that you are patur midinei shemayim. You're patur midinei adam. We can't prosecute for that. You're still responsible midinei shemayim. Next one. Kafato b'chama. If he ties him up in the sun, umeit, and dies. Bitzina, umeit, ties him up in the cold, and dies. Chayav. Because there, the danger or the element that will cause the death is already present at the time that he ties him up. The sun is there when he ties him up. The cold is there when he ties him up. But, sof chama lavo, he ties him up in a space where the sun will eventually reach. Right now it's shady where he tied him up. Eventually the sun will reach and then beat on him, and then he will die from dehydration. Sof tzina lavo, he ties him up outside where it's warm out, but he will get cold, and then he will die from the cold. Patur, there because the element only comes after time. It's not present at the time that he ties him up. That delay already makes it into a derivative action that he's not responsible for because it's not considered to be a direct result of his reaction. It's an indirect result of his action. If he ties him up before a lion, he is patur. Rashi claims, if he wasn't tied up, he wouldn't be able to save himself from the lion. The lion would overpower him either way. His being tied up doesn't really hurt his chances of survival. Because even if he was not tied up, he wouldn't survive the attack of the lion. So that's the reasoning behind why you would be patur in that case. Sounds like the lion would have been there in either case. Or he would have been attacked by the lion in either case. Just a question if he would have been able to defend himself or not. And the feeling is that whether he was or was not able to defend himself would have made no difference. And therefore the kafato, tying him up, is not the contribution to his death. If he possibly could have run away, and the tying him up prevented his ability to run away, then you could argue that that is the cause of his death. But again, then you'd have to have the lion be present already in order for him to be chayav versus the lion coming after a period of time. Because then, again, the danger or the element is not immediately present, and that delay already would make him patur. If neyitushim, he ties him up in front of mosquitoes, chayav. Over there he is responsible because the yitushim, he could have escaped. He could have protected himself. He could have escaped from that. And so therefore, when you tie him up, you're actually preventing his ability to defend himself or take care of himself. Even by the mosquitoes, he is patur. The mosquitoes that were there at the time that he tied him up are not the same ones that are biting him now and the ones causing his death after a period of time. So the danger or the element that's going to kill him, again, wasn't present at the time. It might have been there, but that's not the one that necessarily killed him. The new ones, or they were exchanged with new ones, and the ones that ended up killing him are not the ones that were there at the time that he tied him up, or the ability to run away here, but then makes no difference because of the fact that the danger was not immediately present, and so therefore, it's sof lavo. It's as if it will come in the end. That's the view of Rashi, that the pivotal issue here is the person's ability to defend against the danger. By the lion, he is unable to defend himself, whereas by the mosquitoes, he is able to defend himself. And therefore, it made no difference by the lion if he was tied up, versus by the mosquitoes, where it did make a difference if he was tied up. On the other hand, the Balei Tosafot, based on a principle that they lay out here, frame the issue here differently, and many of the Rishonim follow this view of the Balei Tosafot rather than Rashi's view. The Balei Tosafot stayed over here. The lo Rabbi Rachmana mitzamtzeim el makom shehitchil bo hezek kvar. That the Torah only restricts mitzamtzeim where you are locking someone in place where the hezek, where the damage has already begun. And what the Balei Tosafot point out by the case of the Ari He says that there really is no difference between mosquitoes and a lion, except for Ella, the stamaria dainoit chilach bobo. The lion has yet to start mauling him. The lion has yet to be the present danger in which it's already attacking him. And therefore, when the individual ties him up, they're not responsible because that's the sof chamalavo. That's like the sun coming in the end. It'll eventually reach him, but it's not present at the time. As opposed to the mosquitoes who are already biting him, they're ever present. They are there immediately, and the danger is immediate. And therefore, when you tie the individual up, already you're causing his death with the nezek that is clear and present. But then Ravashi says, listen, if you're saying that the danger is ready and present, those mosquitoes that are here are not the ones that may end up killing him. They might bite him, they might cause him pain and problems, but eventually it's new mosquitoes that are going to come and be the final cause of his death. So there is a change. Clear and present danger is not these mosquitoes that are here now. They're mosquitoes that will exchange in the end. Rava, on the other hand, says, you don't look at every individual mosquito. You look at the mosquitoes or a swarm of mosquitoes as a single unit. And so it doesn't matter that's not the exact same mosquito that's biting him each time, but the swarm or the mosquitoes as a whole exist here, and that present danger makes it that it is now here. Even though eventually there will be other mosquitoes and swarms that come along, they're all part of one unit. The other hand, Ravashi says, no, you look at the individual mosquitoes, the ones that are biting him and causing the problems now are not the same ones that come later. And that's their machloket, as to how to look in that clear and present danger as it being a single unit of a group of smaller items. Or do we look at each individual item and that'll determine whether you think it's actually present now, the danger, or the danger is being exchanged out for another danger that will come later, and therefore it's more similar to the case of Ra'av, where Balei Tosafot say that just because he's hungry now or he's starving now, that's not the same starvation that affects him later, because the starvation builds. And even though he's starving now, the starvation that kills him later is a totally different danger that didn't exist or was not present at the time that he was tied up, even though he was already starving or hungry at that moment. Itzmar, kafalav gigit, if he puts a barrel on top of him, upara lav maziva, or he peels back the roof from above him, Rav of Rab Zera, we have Rav and Rabbi Zera argue about this. Chadamar chayav, one says you're responsible, chadamar patur, one says you're patur. Tistayim, let us try to conclude the Rava hu damar patur. Rava is the one that says you're patur. Damar Rava, kafato umeit birav, if he ties him up and then he dies from starvation, patur. So the same thing here. When he puts the barrel over him, eventually he will suffocate from the loss of oxygen in this area. And similarly, where he peels back the mazivai, peels back the ceiling, the person will eventually die from the exposure to the elements. So maybe this is the same type of idea, which is that the danger will only come about in the future, or that which causes his death will only be in the future. At the point that he puts him in that position, that's not necessarily the case. Adarabo, tistayim de Rabbi Zeiro. Let us conclude that it's Rabbi Zeiro has that opinion, damar patur. Amar Rabbi Zeiro, haiman de aile de chavre bebeite de shisha, person who puts his friend into a house of marble. Just so you know, whenever the Gemara wants to give an example of a place where there is no external element or influence, they always use a house of marble. It's a place where there's no air movement, there's no wind that gets in there, there's no exposure to the elements. It leaves you in a sealed room or a pure environment. That's what the Gemara uses it. So he puts him into this marble house. V'adiklei shraga umeit. He lights a candle, and then the guy dies. Chayav. Then you are responsible. Because the candle is what led to his death, and that you put there at the time that you put him in the house, you put the element that's going to kill him, which is the candle there. The candle kills him, we know, because it eventually eats up all the oxygen that's there, and in this bite to shisha, there's no replacement or exchange with the outside elements, so no oxygen comes to replace it. So in the end, the person's lighting of the candle suffocated that individual because it ate up all the oxygen that's there. The Gemara is going to call the term havla, that hevel, the heat that comes from it, or the bad quality air that comes from it, is what kills the individual. They're not expressing in the terms that we are, which is the elimination of the oxygen, but in essence, they're saying the same thing, which the individual's breathing is exchanging oxygen with carbon dioxide. The candle, in the meantime, is chewing up all the oxygen, so there's no oxygen for this individual to breathe at a certain point. That they call hevel. Time of the adikle shraga. It's only because they lit a candle that Rabbi Zera says you're chayav. Halo adikle shraga. Had he not lit a candle, Lo, he would not have been chayav. Because there, when the individual is put into the house of marble, even though eventually he will die from the same reason, which is eventually he will use up all the oxygen that's there and then suffocate, that is something that is not immediately present at the time he puts him in the house. That's the equivalent of something that will be in the future, a danger in the future. And so therefore, when you put him in there, you haven't put the element that will kill him in there. You simply put him in a position where eventually his breathing will chew up all the oxygen that is available in that area. So that's why they want to attribute the statement of patur, where you put a barrel over someone, that same suffocation that's caused by putting the barrel over them, that's something that will happen in the future. So therefore, Rabbi Zera would be the one who thinks you're patur, just like you are in the house. Rabbi says, no, that doesn't have to be the case. Amrei hotam, below shraga, lo matkel avla. Over there, the house is much bigger. The marble house is huge. So that means he could be in there maybe for days before he chews up the oxygen that's in there. That means at the time that you leave him in there, you lock him in there, there's no suffocation that's beginning. There's no difficulty in breathing that starts then. It takes a long time before he chews up all the oxygen that's in this area. It's not true that you can compare the case of the house to the case of the barrel. There, without the candle, the immediate danger is not there. It takes time before they get to enough point where the oxygen or the havla will start to be a problem. On the other hand, hafa, below shraga, nami matkal havla b'shate. Over here in the barrel, you're already in a confined space. Immediately, the havla, the heat, or the bad quality air already starts to build immediately. His breathing in of itself inside the barrel will also already cause there to be a deficiency of oxygen immediately, or create this havla that's there immediately and cause the death element is already present at the time you're doing that because he's in a much more confined space. And so therefore the Gemara says you can't extrapolate from Rabbi Steira's statement by the marble house to the case of Gigit. And that would make us conclude that Rava is the one who says he is patur, because putting the barrel over them is the equivalent of tying somebody up and then them dying from starvation, or putting them under a barrel and dying from suffocation. Both of those are the same thing, which is it's a time lapse. There is time before the issue comes in. It's not immediately present when you put him there, but it's an eventuality that would happen once you put him in that position. Rava says, nevertheless, you're patur. Rabbi Zera would likely say you're chayav here, based on the Gemara's distinction that in the marble house where the havla is not present immediately, there he says you're patur. But over here, where the havla begins immediately, that's enough to deem you the responsible party and make you chayav in the case where you put the barrel over the individual. And the same thing with peeling back the ceiling or the maziva. There again, even though it'll take time, you already put in motion the element that's going to kill the individual, and therefore according to Rabbi Zera, you're going to be chayav, whereas according to Rava, you're going to be patur. And technically, if you say it's the same thing, then maybe Rabbi Zera would also argue in that case the time up in starvation, which is that the hunger already began immediately, and therefore as a continuum of that hunger, he dies from starvation. Maybe Rabbi Zera would agree that you're chayav, if you consider it to be immediate enough, or an issue that is present already, like the havla and the gigit, then maybe Rabbi Zeh would agree by tying him up and starving that it's chayav, and not like Rava who says it's patur. But not disagreeing that when the person's tied up, and then they starve, that you are the cause of that problem. That's not the question in the Gemara. The problem in the Gemara is that you're not chayav for grama. So the question is, when does it move from grama to kolach adam, where we can say that it's a direct result of your action, rather than an indirect result of your action. So that the Gemara in other places deals with the difference between grama and garmi, which is garmi, many believe you're chayab for, but it's grama you are patur for. How do we determine when something is grama and when something is garmi? So the Rishonim have different qualifications, some of which are time lapse. If there is no time lapse between the position or situation you place and the damage that begins, then that's garmi versus grama. If there is a time lapse, that becomes grama. That's the difference between it being a direct or more directed responsibility versus an indirect response. In both cases, it's not that your individual is actually physically killing the individual. There is an indirect nature, but how indirect is the nature? That has to do with time lapse. That's one. The other element that people speak about is whether the mazik is immediately present. If the mazik is immediately present, it's considered to be garmi, versus if the mazik only comes in afterwards, it's going to be grama. Again, grama, you're going to be patur. Garmi, you're going to be chayav. And that seems to be along the lines of what the Gemara is discussing here, is when is koach adam considered to be garama, that you're, what you did is causation, and therefore you're going to be potur bidei adam chay bidei neshamayim, versus where it's considered to be close enough to being a direct action by you, even though it's indirect in nature. You're not doing the direct killing. It's indirect how the death happens, but your contribution is so clear and present that you're going to be considered responsible as if it's not a indirect action, as if it's a direct action. The Gemara continues. It's an interesting case here. Amar Rava dachafo lebor, person pushes him into a pit, v'sulam bebor, and there is a ladder there which would grant him the ability to exit from there. Uba acher v'silko, and then somebody else comes and pulls the ladder out. Afilu hu kadam v'silko, or even the person who pushed the individual into the bor pulls the ladder out before the guy reaches the bottom of the bor, patur. Because at the moment that he pushed the individual, at that moment, it was not a death push, because the person had the ability to escape. So at the moment that the koach adam went into action, that koach adam was not a killing motion, because the motion wouldn't have resulted in death, elaim kain, or except for the fact that someone took an action after that point. Whether the person who took the action is the same person who pushed him in, or whether the person who took the action is someone else, it doesn't matter. It now changes the environment to the extent that the original push was not really the problem. The problem was the removal of the ladder and not the original push. The danger is that if he stays in the bor, he's going to die. That danger that he's going to die from in the havla or exposure to the elements may not be there at the time that he pulls the ladder. The person who's pushing him is patur because he could have gotten out. Person pulls the ladder out, may not be a chayver mitzamtzein, because that's the equivalent of sofa chamalavo. It's a case where the sun will come in the future, it's not an immediate present danger. If the danger is already present when he's in the bor, there's snakes, there's other things in the bor, then maybe when he pulls the ladder, it'll be chayav, because then he's leaving him to those elements immediately. V'amarova, zarak chetz, this is more a classic case that people are aware of, case where he shoots an arrow, vitris biyado, and the individual is there with a shield. And then someone comes along and takes the shield away. So say, for instance, the person's tied up, and he has a shield that's protecting him. Somebody shoots an arrow. In the current state, nothing will happen. The arrow will hit the shield. Someone goes and then removes the shield while the arrow's in flight. Or he made a fast dash, got over there, and after he shot the arrow, he pulled the trees away. Patur. Again, the person who shot the arrow is patur. At the moment that he shot the arrow can't make it to its destination. It will not kill, because there is something that would stop the arrow from reaching that destination. So when he shot it, it was not a killer arrow because of the shield that's there. The removal of the shield later on is what causes the problem. So this you were asking about before. So he shoots an arrow. Usmanim biyadom. And the individual has the cure in hand. He has the medicinal cure to seal up the wound, the antibiotics, whatever he needs to survive the injury from that arrow shot. Ubacher upizran. Somebody comes after he shoots the arrow and disperses the medicine, throws away the medicine, so he no longer has the ability to cure himself. Vaifiluhu kadam upizram. Or even if the guy who shot the arrow dashed over there and spilled over the medication or got rid of whatever would be the antidote to this arrow shot. That was the question you had before about rabies. Or something that's caused by poison. If the antidote is readily available and the person could survive, but later on something happens and the antidote is no longer available, or it's changed, meaning that obviously if the antidote is not available at the time that he does it, then it's clear there he's chayav, because whatever he did is going to result in death. But if the antidote was available, and after that point in time something changed and the antidote is no longer available, then he's not responsible, because at the moment that he did it, he did not give a killing blow. That's the key element here, which is the common denominator between all of these. Did you do something that was a killer blow? Well, if at the time that the person took the action, it was not a killer blow, even though if it turned into that later on, you can't be held responsible for that because you did not initiate a killer blow. So in all these cases, patur de'idna de'shadebe yochol hitrapol tavo. Because at the moment he shot the arrow, it could have been cured, since the antidote was available or the medication was available. The fact that that disappeared after the fact doesn't change the fact that the moment he engaged, or his koach went to action, that was not a killer blow, or that would not resulted in death. Amar Rav Ashi, Hilkach afilu smanim b'shuk. He doesn't even have to have the medicine in hand or the antidote in hand. It's available in the market. You can get it. Someone who's in this predicament could go out and buy the antidote. So then that would be enough that the person would not be held responsible for the death. Because at the time that he did it, there was a cure, there was ability to procure the medicine that would have cured the individual. What happens if the medicine shows up? Now all of a sudden we have medicine that can cure the problem. He says, the guy was innocent, you've now found a way to protect him and give him an excuse as to why he's not going to be chayav. So here you have this idea that even at the time that he shot it, it wasn't clear that the medicine was available, but it became available afterwards. That will take away the blow that he is given. So even though when he shot it, he didn't know that there was medicine available. He didn't know that the person would be able to access the medicine. And when he shot it, technically it would have been a killer shot. Now all of a sudden the medicine shows up. So the person has the ability to cure themselves. And they die anyway because they don't take the medicine or they spill the medicine. Whatever happens afterwards, then he's not responsible because there was a point of time that could have been intervention that would have prevented the death. Whatever happened that didn't allow that intervention to take place is not the responsibility of the person that shot the arrow. He's not the direct cause of death. He's only the indirect cause of death because some other incident took place that didn't allow for the cure to take effect or be used, even though it wasn't available when he shot it. Nevertheless, it became available after that time. Now, over here, there are two major questions that need to address. I will defer one of the questions, which is, why is the individual here who moves the shield patur? It should be that the guy who shot the arrow is patur, because when he shot the arrow, it didn't have that killing ability. On the other hand, the person who's pulling away the shield seems to be the one who's actually causing the death directly of this individual by removing the shield. And the question is, why does the Gemara seemingly think that the individual who removes the shield, like the one who removes the ladder, is patur over here? So that I'll defer to later, because it'll come up in an upcoming Mar at the end of today's Daf, that the Yad Ramah will help us in making a distinction as to why over here you're patur, and over there you actually will be chayav. The other question to address is something that the Bali of Tosafot actually asked on the Yomud Aleph, which is that we have a principle that is laid out in the Gemara and Baba Kama, which is, there is a machloket between whether Isho is Mishumim or no. When a person is chayav for lighting a fire and the damage that caused by that fire, is that a monetary obligation and a monetary responsibility? Because you lit the fire, you're now responsible for the monetary damage it does. Or do we say, Isho Mishum Chitzav? Do we look at fire as being an extension of the individual themselves, or as if they shot an arrow? And then whenever that arrow lands, that'll be their direct damage. Gemara Baba Kama deals with the many nafkaminot between whether Isho Mishum Mimino or Isho Mishum Chitzav, but what the Bali of Tosafot point out over here is, why don't we invoke that principle? According to the one who says, Isho Mishum Chitzav, that when somebody puts something into motion, it's considered to be their action, as long as that he put in motion is still going. And what the Bali of Tosafot point out is, it makes no difference whether you bring the fire closer to the object damaged, or whether you bring the object damaged closer to the fire. In either case, it's called Isho Mishum Chitzav, that the fire's movement, or the change in the environment, or whatever's happening there, is attributed directly to you. And so the Bali Tosafot say, why don't you say the same thing over here? For instance, not in the case where he ties him up outside in the location, then the sun comes, and then the cold comes, because over there, he didn't move the individual. He just froze him in place. But on the other hand, what the Bali Tosafot point out is, what happens if he ties him up in the house, and then he brings him outside and puts him where the sun's going to come eventually? That's what we call Mekarev Davar Leitzel Eish. You're bringing the object towards the damaging item. He now puts him in harm's way by doing that. And the Bali Tosafot say, if you hold up Isho Mishum Chitzav, you should be chayav in this instance. And the Bali Tosafot then say, Ein Hochanami, that this Gemara, and many of the conclusions that we're going to look at in these Gemaras, are all following the position of Isho Mishum Mimono, that Eish is really a monetary responsibility, and not an extension of the action that you are taking. But Ein Hachanami, the person who holds Isho Mishum Chitzav, in these instances would think that you are Chayav. That's one possible way to learn. Then the Bali Tosafot offer another answer, which is, Od Yesh Lefaresh, De B'chol Hani De B'sof Chama B'tzina V'ari Lavo, Even he ties him up and brings him out there. Patur, the dummy, the koach, kocho. Because that is like a second derivative action of the individual. Because your koach is that you now tied him up and took him outside. And then the derivative action is that now that the sun comes, it's going to hurt him. So your direct action is not what caused the problem. It was your indirect action. It was the secondary effects of what you're doing. And we're going to see upcoming in the Gemara that's called Koach Kocho. And so Tosafot suggests over here that this case of tying him up inside and bringing him out is really Koach Kocho. And even according to the one who says Yishom Yishom Chitzav, you would be Patur. But then you have to explain why in instances in the Gemara in Baba Kama, where you have Yishom Yishom Chitzav and you are Chayav, there it's Koach Kocho as well, and yet there we still say you're Chayav. And that's what the Balei HaTosafot explain over here, that the Inyan Mamon Chayav Nezek Shalem. The Lo Dami Lechatzi Nezek Tzorot, Alkalav the Koach Kocho Hu, Dao Yishon Nami Chayav Mishom Memono. Because according to the one who says that Yishom Mishom Chitzav, also says you're Chayav Yishom Mishom Memono. You're also Chayav, meaning it subsumes in it the fact that you're also responsible for the Eish as if it was a monetary damager. And so what the Balei HaTosafot say that Koach Kocho has a different outcome when it comes to Nizakim than it does when it comes to death. In the cases of murder, in the cases of killing, Koach Kocho will already make the person patur. Because, as the Balei HaTosafot already noted, that the Gemara is only Mirabe Mitzamtzeim in cases where the Nezek is clear and present right then. Otherwise, it's going to be deemed Koach Kocho, a second derivative action of the individual, and for that, you're not going to be Chayav. On the other hand, by the case of Nizikin, Koach Kocho will be Chayav, even though in some instances we call that Katzi Nezek Tzrorot, which is when the animal kicks a stone, and then the stone does damage, which is again second derivative, that we call Koach Kocho, and you only pay Katzi Nezek. Over here by Ish, that will not be the case. Because Koach Kocho, when you call it Isho Mishum Chitzav, plus subsumed that it's Isho Mishum Mimono, we call it that it's not considered to be a derivative action, but rather whatever you do now becomes your monetary responsibility at that point in time. So the action that you put in, whether that's moving the person in the way of the fire, or lighting the fire and having it go somewhere, wherever it goes, that's considered to be your action directly. And then when it does damage, whatever location it is, it's not considered to be then a derivative of your action, so that it would be second derivative, but rather it is your property now doing damage, and therefore you are chayav. And that way, Tosafot distinguishes between monetary damages and death as to whether Koach Kocho is a ptur or not when it comes to this concept of Yishom Mishum Chitzav. So those are two views within the Balei HaTosafot as to how to deal with our sugya in the face of Yishom Mishum Chitzav. This will, along with the previous question I just asked that we are going to postpone answering till later, will have major nafkaminot in terms of halachic ramifications of this sugya. And hopefully at the end of today's daf, we'll have the opportunity to discuss some of those halachic ramifications. Vamarava, zarak tsror bakotel, person who throws a rock or a pebble hard at the wall, v'chazara, and then it rebounds lacharei off the wall, v'haragah, and then kills an individual, chayav, you are responsible. So Rashi says over here, v'nitkavem larog et chaveiro, and his intent when he threw the stone at the wall and having it rebound off, he intended to kill the individual, he is responsible there, daha nami kochohu. That is classified as being his koach, meaning his action directly, even though it bounces off the wall, which now makes it somewhat indirect, we nevertheless attribute that to being a direct action of his, and not an indirect action. The Gemara later on in the sugya will try to differentiate when something is considered to be direct or indirect action, and then we'll have to resolve what Rashi means over here, that it means it's still kocho when it bounces off the wall. And then the Gemara says, v'tani tuna, and we have a braita that is supportive of this idea, k'gon elu ha-misachakim b'kadur. Like those individuals who play with a ball, sharago b'mezid neragim. If they kill somebody by throwing the ball at the wall and having it bounce off and then kill someone, again, they're throwing it with intent to kill, and people throw with such force into the wall expecting it to bounce off, then if they do that intentionally, neragim, they're going to be put to death as murderers. Bishogeg, if it's done unintentionally, golim, then they'll be subject to galut. Bishogeg, golim, that the fact that when it's unintentional they put into galut, pshita, what's the question here? I says, no, but mezid neragim itzrichalei. We need the fact that when it's done intentionally that you are put to death, you're considered a murderer. Madutena hatrat safeki. You would have thought that the warning that the person gives is a hatrat safek. You're going to say, if you throw this ball so hard at the wall, it's going to rebound off and then hit the individual and kill them. And it says, I know, and despite that I'm still doing it. Maybe it's still considered a hatrat safek because of the fact that We're not certain he will be successful. Even if he throws it with enough force, he's got to get the right angle and the right amount of force into the ball in order to kill this individual. When the Edei HaShoah are warning this individual, it's not a guarantee that he will succeed at what he's doing. And that's called Hashrat Safek, where you're warning him without certainty about the action that he's about to take. So that's what the Gemara is saying here. Miyemar the Hadra. Who says he's going to be successful at getting it bouncing off the wall or having it return at the right angle? Kamash Malon, that we say that that is the case, that people who play ball and who have good aim, when they throw, they're almost certain of the outcome that's there, and it's a high enough probability that we don't consider it Hadrat Safek anymore. And now the Gemara brings evidence to that, the Tani Rav Tachlifa Bar Marava Kamei de Rabbi Abahu, Kagon Elu HaMisachakim BeKador, like these individuals who are ball players, Sharago Tochar Ba'amot Patur. If they kill with the ball that rebounds off the wall, if it's within 4 amot of the wall, they are patur. Chutz le'arba amot, if the person is stationed more than 4 amot away from the wall, then they are chayav. Rashi over here, in discussing the patur and chayav, brings two possibilities of what that means. In the first explanation, Rashi says, patur azorek migalut, that this is talking about a case of shogeg, and the person is patur from galut if it does it within proximity to the wall. Whereas if it's further away from the wall, they are chayav galut. That's the first way Rashi explains it. Later on, Rashi comes back and says, itim efarshe. There's some that explain, hay chayavinu p'turim b'mita, that this chayav and patur references to murder over here, ukugon shehitru bo, and like in a case where they warned him. The Bali Tosafot quote Rashi and say, lo mistaber lefarish klal inyan chiyuv mita b'mezit. There's no way you can explain over here that it's talking about intentional murder. The guy standing within 4 amot, and you warn them, why should he be patur in that case? There he's clearly intending. I can understand when it's unintentional, then the distance of the individual from the wall might make a difference, or the distance of the individual in general might make a difference. But when you're dealing with intentional murder, and the person intends to kill them, no matter how far away they are, it doesn't really matter because they're intending to kill them. And therefore, Dalai Tosafot favors heavily Rashi's first explanation that we're talking about a case of Shogeg over here. And the Tosafot goes on to discuss what exactly that is, which is that if a person has a certain intent in doing something, and then the action that's taken deviates from that intent. For instance, a person intended to throw a small distance, and the ball went a much further distance. Over there you are patur from Galut. And the Tosafot brings a limudim in the Gemara for that tour. And he says that that's similar to what's happening over here. Person has a certain intention. If his intention is not carried out, then that results in him not being chayav galut. Now we have to understand, and this is somewhat difficult to understand, the Gemara is going to explain it in a second, why is it that when the person is proximate to the wall, that's considered not the intent of the individual, whereas when the person is further away from the wall, that is considered to be the intent or the action of the individual enough to make him chayav in galut. So the Gemara explains, Amar le Ravina Rav Ashi, hey chidami. What exactly is this scenario here? Ida ka nechale, if he wants this to happen, and the ball did exactly what he wanted, afilu purtanami. Doesn't matter how far or close to the wall he is, then his action or his intention was carried out. He wasn't intending to kill someone, but the ball did what his intention was. In that case, he should be chayav galut, no matter how far the person is away from the wall. Ida lo nechale, if the ball did not go to the place the person intended, afilu tuvanami. Even if they're further away from the wall, lo, it should not be the case that he's chayav galut. Meaning that when it comes to shogeg over here, if the determining factor is how well was the intent of the individual carried out, not with regards to murdering this person, but the action or the throw that they took, did it successfully carry out what their intent was, or did it not successfully carry out their intent? If it's successful, he should be chayav. If he's unsuccessful, he should be patur. So amalei, stam misachakim bekadur, Kama de, either the gear to here is the azlimine or the ayotme minach lechane. To say or suggest here that when a person throws the ball or the game players here, their intent is to have the ball bounce back as far possible as they can. So now, there are different ways to explain this. The way that Rashi explains it is, the intent of the individual is to maximize the distance of the rebounding ball off of the wall. And therefore, if the ball travels a significant distance, call it 4 amot away from the wall, and then it kills the individual, that is carrying out the intent of the individual. That means that the ball had sufficient force to bounce off the wall, come out 4 amot, and still have enough force to kill an individual. That means that the intent of the individual was carried out, which was to maximize the distance of the rebound off the wall. And that's why if the person's hit more than 4 amot away from the wall, you're going to be chayav. Whereas in the case where they're closer to the wall, your intent wasn't carried out because the fact that it hit them so close to the wall means that your throw wasn't sufficiently strong to go far out. It was stopped or it hit somebody very close to the wall and did not carry out your intent. That's the way that Rashi explains it. The Yad Ramah, on the other hand, thinks that the whole sugya about more than 4 amot away or less than 4 amot away has to do with the individual making the throw itself. If that individual is within 4 amot of the wall, they won't get significant enough strength to have the rebound be strong. But then, if they are further away from the wall, they will have enough throw and power in their throw to cause the ball to rebound much further. And so therefore, they're standing further away from the wall means that their intent is carried out. They're standing very close to the wall when they throw the ball, then their intent is not being carried out because they're not going to successfully launch the ball further out. So those are the two ways to explain the Gemara. But then the Gemara asks a very basic question, which even somewhat undermines some of the conclusions we met before, which is, the Gemara says, Lamemra, di gai gavna kochohu. What you're saying from here is that this is considered to be an action of the individual. When it rebounds off the wall, that's still considered to be the koach, the action of the individual, not a derivative of his action. It's not second derivative, it's considered to be the power itself. Now, that somewhat undermines, and the Marsha and the Rekiv Eger both asked this before, the Gemara asked, what's the chiddush about the stone bouncing off the wall? And the Gemara said, oh, it teaches you that this is not considered to be hatrat safek. That it's not considered to be a hatra'ah that is in doubt, that the probabilities are so high that it's not considered to be hatrat safek. The truth is that the maskana from here is not so simple because the Gemara is saying here, this is considered to be koach. That's the chiddush then of the braita and all these statements is that this is considered to be kochohu. And so then why is the Gemara coming to this conclusion about Hatrat Safek before, when the Gemara's question belies an underlying assumption that this is a huge chiddush that the Braita and all these Memorot are telling us, that this is considered to be the koach of an Adam. So the Marsha suggests that maybe the Gemara there is dealing with the chiddush in Rava's statement that you wouldn't have known from the Braita. You're right, the chiddush in the Braita is the fact that it's considered to be kochohu. What is Rava adding when he adds in the issue about the Tzoror, that wasn't already apparent in the Braita, and so that's what the Gemara is concluding, that that chiddush is the fact that it's not considered to be a hatrat safek. And that might have to do with the fact that maybe Rava is talking about a case of mezid, versus the case of the Braita, that might be speaking about a case of shogeg. That only works out according to those that explain the latter part of this Gemara as being shogeg rather than mezid, according to the alternate interpretation in Rashi, as well as the Yad Ramo, which seems to indicate a similar view, is that it's talking about mezid as well, then that distinction doesn't exist. And truly, the Rabbi Kiva Eger here leaves it as a tzarech iyun. And so now the Gemara challenges, Viramini, is that really considered to be kocho, hamikadesh? Here we're speaking about a person who is making the mechatat. Mechatat is the waters that you sprinkle on the individual from the paraduma in order to make them tahor from tumata meit. You do that by taking the waters that are live spring waters, taking a stone channel, putting them into a area where the water collects, and then you place the ashes of the parah into that and mix it up, and that creates the mixture that is used for sprinkling on the individuals. So hamikadesh is the person placing the ashes into that live spring water. V'nafal kidusha yado. Similarly, the way that it happened here is that the ashes fell onto his hand, as he was going to put them into the shoket, into the area that's holding the water, the live spring water, all atzad, or they fell on the side of the bucket or utensil that's collecting the water, v'achakach nafal the shoket, and then they eventually fall into where they were supposed to go, pasul, they're considering pasul. So here you have like a rebound. It hits the person's hand on the way down, and then rebounds into the area where the water's collected, or it hits the side and then falls in. Those seem to be rebounds. And we're considering it not to be kocho, not considered to be as if he was mikadesh, the chatat, as if it happened by itself. That's an opposition to what we said over here. When it says, no. Hachamai eskinan bishotet. Over there it's talking about a case, not where he threw it with strength, but it simply was dropping it out. So then there you can't say that the bouncing off of his hand or bouncing off the side of the collection area is considered to be his koach. You can speak about his koach when he throws with force, and then the item bounces off of something. That's considered to be kocho. Over here, that's not what's happening. What's happening is passive over here because he's just dropping it and then it's bouncing off of these items. Or you could suggest that even if he did throw it down or place it down, it didn't fall because it rebounded off those items. It simply fell on them and then dropped off of them. And since it wasn't the direct result of his strength that causes the rebound, therefore it's not considered to be kocho. Tashma, what about this case? Machat she'ya netuna al-acheres. You have a needle that is on top of a piece of earthenware. V'hiza aleha. And then he sprinkles the mechatat in order to make this needle, which was tamei tumat meit, he wants to make it tahor. Safek ala machat hiza, safek ala cheres hiza. We're not certain as to whether he sprinkled on the needle directly, or whether it hit the kli cheres, the clay or earthenware that was there. Umitza aleha. And then it then went from the earthenware onto the needle. Hazato psu. In that case, we do not consider the sprinkling efficacious in order to take the tumata meit away. Don't read it as mitza, which is that he threw it with strength, and so either it hit the needle directly, or it bounced or rebounded off the earthenware and then went to the needle, because then you're right, that would be considered kochol, like we just said before. Rather, the case is matza, as Rashi says, lav l'shom mitzui davai hataza. It's not considered to be a rebound or something that's sprinkling and bouncing off. L'shom mitzia. It's the passive form of the verb that it rolled down there, or it made its way over there. And so what the question over here is that it made its way onto the needle. We're just not sure how it got onto the needle. Did it get onto the needle because he sprinkled onto the needle? Or did it come from a rebound off the clay? Or maybe neither of those are true, but rather it was on the cheres, and then the cheres was on some sort of decline or incline, and it rolled, or the water went down and then went onto the needle. So over there, we don't even know if it's his koach that did it. Ein ochanami, if the only two options were you threw it on the needle directly, or you sprinkled it on the cheres and it bounced onto the needle, that would have been fine. Problem here is that there's a third element of safek, which is maybe it did neither of those. It landed on the cheretz and then made its way to the needle. And that's what it means, matzah, that we know it's on the needle now, we just have no idea how it got there. So in that case, it's pasul, because we're not certain that it was done by koach adam. And since it was tameh before, it remains with its status of chezkat tumah. And since you can't be certain about sprinkling was done properly, it will not remove the tumah in that case. But ein ochanami, if you threw with force and it bounced off or rebounded, that would be considered to be your koach. Amar Rav Papa. So now we have a continuation of this discussion about what is considered to be the direct result or the action of an individual, and what is considered to be a derivative in which they will not be responsible. So Amar Rav Papa, Ayman de kafte lechavre, person who ties up his friend, va'ashka ole bidka demayo, and then he put some sort of diversion, some sort of mechanism that would turn the water towards his friend, and then overwhelm his friend, he is considered to be responsible. Gire de Dehu, it is his arrow that's being shot, umichayev, and he is responsible for that. Hani milei bekoach rishon. That is true when it is the first action taken. Aval bekoach sheni, groma ba'almuhu. When it comes to the derivative action, that's considered to be koach sheni, groma, and he is not responsible for that. Question is, what is koach rishon and what is considered to be koach sheni? The way Rashi reads it over here is, Koach Rishon, kishepin alem derech letzad ze miyad naflu alav davi kocho. When he redirected the water immediately hits that individual. Aval bekoach sheni, shenicho rachok kitzat. There's a distance between him. Kenola flu amay miyad bitzeto mi gidrotehem alav. The water didn't immediately fall onto him when he redirected the water. It had to flow first, and then only then caught up with him. So Rashi says it has to do with the distance the individual is from the diversion of the river. If the diversion directly hits the individual, then the person is chayav. If the diversion first has to hit the ground and then flow to that individual, you will be patur, because that would be considered koach sheni. Now, the Yad Ramah offers a second explanation here, which is if it is the water that first emerges from the diversion, that the person will be chayav for. If it is the subsequent water that comes out of there, that individual will not be chayav for it. He's responsible for the original diversion, the water that comes out immediately, but not that which is later. That goes back to the explanations that we gave before with regards to the difference between groma and garmi. Possibly the difference is here explaining why sometimes you're chayav and sometimes you're patur. Why is it considered koach rishon or groma? Well, two things that we spoke about were delay, absence of time, and number two is the danger being immediately present or the mazik being immediately present. And so that you see here in these two explanations, both issues of elapsement of time as well as the immediacy of the danger that is present. And that is part of the definition of what's considered to be the koach of the individual, what's considered to be a derivative of the individual, and therefore a koach sheni or groma, and the person is not chayav for. Now, I mentioned before, we have to ask the question as to why the person who pulls away the shield is not considered to be chayav. The Yad Ramah says, you have to distinguish between these two cases. He says that Rapapa specifically compared it to a case where you shoot an arrow. In the case where you shoot an arrow, the individual doesn't actually throw the arrow. They pull the string on the bow back and they shoot the arrow out. Yet they're still considered to be responsible for that item. And that's what Rapapa says over here. When you divert the water, even though you're not the one actually throwing the water, your diversion of the strength of the water is your responsibility. And so too, by the case of the arrow, when you pull the string of the bow back, you're responsible for the flight of the arrow that goes out from that. That's considered to be your koach. On the other hand, if the danger is not immediate and present, then you're not going to be chayav. And that's what the Arama says. The difference between the guy with the shield is, the arrow is in flight somewhere. When he pulls away the shield, the arrow is not immediately present there to kill the individual. That's something that will have time lapse in it, as well as not be immediately present. So when he pulls away the shield, that does not make him directly responsible for it. As opposed to the case of the bidka over here, where he redirects the water that flows out immediately is there. That water that's behind that diversion, and now is being turned, is the water that's going to kill this individual. And therefore the mazik is immediately present over there, and that water that hits the individual is what drowns him, and that's why you're responsible. But, as the Yad Ramah given that second explanation, if the water that comes out afterwards drowns the individual, you won't be responsible for that, because that's something that wasn't the immediate danger that came from the redirection of the water. And the way that the Yad Ramah phrases it, "V'lo dam yaha milto lezrok chetz v'tris v'yado, de'ilu hotam ki salke l'tris, mekami nimta agvire l'gabehu desalke," that he takes it away before the arrow ever reaches there. "Dilu botar demati l'gabe tris," because if it came and already hit the shield, and then he pulled the shield away afterwards, there wouldn't have been any danger, nothing would have happened. So you can't make the claim that the removal of the shield automatically results in the death of the individual. It has to do with whether there's a mazik that's present or not present. So that will be determined about how close or proximate that danger is to the removal of the tris. But over here in the case of the bidka, when he moves the dirt and redirects the water, the mafsik ben mayla diday, that's what is the dam or whatever is stopping the water from reaching the individual is tied up. That earth or that dam is blocking it. Mayu denagi bahayu afra gufe. The water itself that will come and kill this individual, drown this individual, is actually touching directly the item that is mafsik or protecting this individual. It's up against it. And therefore, when you move it away, it becomes giri didehu. It becomes his arrow or his direct action. Teda. And he says, my proof is, da mayadat to the batar hachi, if he dies from the water that comes afterwards, meaning that the water that was up against the dike, up against the dam, that water that comes later, he's patur from, because that's considered to be koach sheni and not koach rishon. And koach rishon is only the water that is directly there against the divider that's protecting him. And once that water is released, if that water kills, that the individual is responsible for. Any water after that, he's not responsible for. And that's how he distinguishes between our case and the case before that was found in the Gemara. So this distinction that the Yad Ramah makes, as well as Rashi's distinction as what's considered a koach rishon and koach sheni, have major impact on some halachic questions, which hopefully I'll send out to you. But in the discussion of, first of all, electricity, when it comes to electricity and switching on a switch for electricity, the closing of the circuit, what do we consider that? Do we consider that to be koach rishon or koach sheni? How is that considered to be groma or not groma for the individual when they flip the switch? Are they then allowing electricity that's right there to go through? Or they're allowing electricity in the future to come through that switch? Is that considered to be groma or direct? Maybe that'll have impact on how we view electricity with regards to Yom Tov at least, maybe even with regards to Shabbat. Or if you light an electric lamp, is that considered like you're lighting candles for Shabbat or possibly for Chanukah? As well as the questions about if you open up a window that helps plants grow, if you open up a door that causes a fire to burn better on Shabbat, is that considered to be your koach or is that considered to be groma? In addition, when it comes to working machinery, when it comes to mitzvot that require a kavanah, like the making of matzahs that require intent for making them for matzah shmura, is pushing a button, an electric button, that considers to be koach adam. enough so that it's deemed to be that you're making matzah shmura and have in mind for that. All of these questions relate to what's considered to be koach adam, what's considered to be your action, and what's considered to be a derivative of your action. And that is exactly what the Gemara is discussing over here, what's considered to be koach rishon and koach sheni. All of these questions relate to the discussion here, what's koach rishon, koach sheni, and the definitions given by Rashi and the Yad Ramah over here. And just for a sample, you can see here in the Shut Achiezer, he asks with regards to closing a circuit, and he says, from that Yad Ramah that we just quoted, when the item is immediately present and will come into effect as you take this action, then over, when you close the circuit by flipping the switch, over miyad, the electricity immediately pushes through. That's similar to that case of diverting the water. Just like the water. For that reason, it's like his action. When you would connect electric circuits in this way, it's the equivalent of havara biyadayim. And he says, even if after you flipped it through some sort of spring mechanism, that would cause the circuit to be closed and allow electricity to flow, that he says is still dummy biyotar the bitka the maya bekoach rishon the chayim mishum giri delay. It looks like it's his arrow being shot, and therefore the closing of the circuit is considered to be his action of havara. And then in Shutar Tzvi, he has an issue where a person who puts soup, for instance, on a plata that is not currently on, later on Shabbat, the plata will go on and then heat up the soup. Is that considered to be a problem of Bishul B'Shabbat? And he says over here, that depends on this Tosfot that we spoke about earlier, that if an individual ties someone up and brings them out into the sun, that's considered to be his koach, and he'll be chayav. Based on the Tosfot before, that said when you do that, you're chayav, even though the lion still has to act, or the sun still has to come. Al-Kopanim, nidon, shumikarevet akdera la'esha chashmal. Over here, where he's bringing the k'dera to the fire that's going to be there, shozoreim kvar, and the electricity is already flowing, kvar nimtza v'yavo me'elav el-tanur. It's going to happen by itself. There's no other action that needs to play its place. V'yesh ladun davi ma'amid k'dera b'shabbat b'makom sh'sofa yesh lavo. It's the equivalent of putting something down where fire will eventually get there. V'avig mekarev k'dera le'yesh. It's like bringing a k'dera closer to the yesh. So here, when you put the soup on the cold plot on Shabbat, and then it turns on, that should be considered to be bishul, because you mekarev davar le'yesh, which is an Isur Min HaTorah, because that's considered to be your koach, and not a derivative koach. So when he puts the soup down on Shabbat, that's considered to be that his koach is already meeting the fire that eventually will be there. Or what we saw before, what Tosafot claimed, Isho Mishum Chitzav, in these situations, will deem the action to be your action. Now we just conclude the Gemara with Ramar Papa. Rav Papa adds to that, Zarak Tzur Lamala, someone throws a rock up, V'alchalit Tzadim, and it goes off the center line, V'haraga, and then kills chayav. You're responsible for that. Amalei mar barvashi der papa my time up. What's the reason when it moves to the side, you are chayav mishum de kohu, because you consider it to be his action that's doing it. So Ravashi says, how can you say that that's because it's his exertion that's causing this? Ikoho tezel el. If it's his exertion, he threw it up. It should have just gone up. The fact that it's moving to the sides seems to have nothing to do with him. So the papa responds to him and says, v'ilav kohu, if it's not his exertion over here, then it should have come straight down. It's obvious that it's deviating to the sides because of him, because otherwise gravity would bring it straight back down. Ella koach kachushu, but rather it is a small derivative of his action, which is the person's intent over here is to throw the rock straight up and have it come straight down. In that case, Rapapa says you're going to be patur because your action to throw it up ends when the rock peaks, and as it starts to come down, gravity takes over. And then it's gravity's pull that is causing the damage, whatever happens from that stone, or the killing by that stone, and you're not responsible for that because there's a change from your action to a derivative action, which is the gravity taking over. On the other hand, if it goes to the sides, you're suggesting that his throwing it up caused it to move to the sides, and then when it comes down, then it's your responsibility. But obviously he didn't throw it exactly up, he threw it on some sort of angle. And that angling will also influence the trajectory on the way down, and that's considered to be his koach, however slight it is, because it's not just gravity that's taking over. Yes, gravity is making the pole to bring it down, but the fact that it deviated off the middle line is still some of his action, some of his push, that is causing it to deviate or fly on an angle. that angle was caused by his what's called koach kachush, his light action, because most of his force was given up or ended when it peaked at the top. Now it's coming down, that's gravity, but the fact that it's coming down on an angle is because of the fact that his action is still now influencing the trajectory of this rock, and that's why he's held accountable for when it moves to the sides versus when it goes straight up and comes straight back down. Now the Yerad Yerama does qualify that if the rock falls straight down after a person drops it from a high location, then they will be responsible. That is called Girei Delay, that's like him shooting an arrow. The case that we're specifically speaking about over here is when he throws it up, and then the strength or the upward trajectory stops, and then it starts to come down. That coming down is already considered to be the derivative or gravity taking over rather than the strength of his throwing up that is causing it. And we're going to stop here, two lines down on the top of Ayin Chet Amud Aleph.